Hey folks, welcome to another episode of the Wrench Turners Podcast, a show that's about improving the life, well-being, and productivity of mechanics everywhere. I am your host, Mr. Joshua Taylor, founder of Wrench Turners Online. And on today's show, I get to talk to another technician, Steve Kill. He is a shop foreman and growing leadership individual in his shop. And I'm looking forward to getting his insights on the inner workings of his mind and what it's like on the shop floor. So without further ado, let's get into it. Steve, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, of course. No problem.
And it's interesting. I said it before about while we weren't yet recording, but it's poignant that we have this recording right after a career development conversation on SDL about technicians. What a great episode that was. And I really appreciate you coming on and supporting not only SDL, but supporting me for coming on the show and supporting the 10 Mil crew. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, of course.
Awesome. So let's dive into this. You've been around a hot minute. You've been fixing stuff for a hot minute. I understand from who I know around us that you are not just a top technician, but you are an awesome leader in your shop. And I want to know what, take us back. What got you into automotive in the first place?
Hot Wheels.
Hot Wheels.
My grandmother and my mom, I was probably 2 years old, maybe, I don't know, something like that, bought me one. I was a little boy. I always liked cars. I always had, little toys and all that nonsense. They bought me one, and I used to play with them and everything, and then they would buy me the, special collection ones, and I had all the little carry cases with the wheels on it and all that nonsense. And the older I got, I started getting into cars more and more. I always liked cars. I always liked the way they looked. I always liked the way they sounded, I started getting more into actual cars as opposed to, the ones that just are, a figment of somebody's imagination. So I actually just started going and buying them and collecting them and keeping them in boxes and packages, and I never opened them. I started playing with them, and it's gotten a tad out of hand, but...
Hey, collecting things can get a tad out of hand. I've had a little bit of collector stuff over my life. Back in the day, Pokemon, Digimon, I had a whole collection of Yu-Gi-Oh! Back in the day.
Okay. Yep.
And years ago, this is 2008, 2009, so recession hit. So as a technician in the industry that's been around long enough that if you were flat rate during 2008, it wasn't a good year.
Yeah.
It really wasn't a good year. Struggling to pay bills, struggling to pay rent. I had to sell my Yu-Gi-Oh! Collection, and I probably had... If I had it still today, I probably have about a $10,000 collection of Yu-Gi-Oh! Right. And at the time, I probably sold it for about $600 because I needed to pay rent. I needed to pay rent. And that's just the way it was, because at the time, my collection wasn't doing me anything good, and there was I was making 10 hours per 2 weeks at the time. So
yeah.
So I wouldn't say collection got me into the trade. So do you remember what your very first Hot Wheels was?
It was a Corvette. And I still have it.
And you still have it?
I still have it.
So you've got the collection going. So how did that progress? So you're getting Hot Wheels and you're now going out of your way to collect them. How did that progress into being in the shop?
So my uncle always had a bunch of cars. So I was always kind of around it, and I was always around people that enjoyed cars. They had motorcycles, stuff like that. Couple of my cousins had some pretty cool stuff. My one cousin, he had a Camaro. So I was always kind of around it, and it was always something for some reason that was very interesting to me. And I was always very mechanical, I guess, as a kid. I was that kid that would take things apart and then not put them back together, but then slowly, which my parents absolutely loved, But I started slowly figuring out how to put them back together. So it started there. And then once I got to high school, I was able to take like the auto shop, the wood shop, metal shop, all that nonsense. And when I did it, and by that point, what are you in high school? Like 12, 13 when you start high school, something like that. Mm-hmm. I finally was like old enough that I actually had a concept of it. And I did my first auto shop, which was we took apart a lawnmower engine, put it back together. And all of the friends I made in that class were like me. We were all mechanics. We all like cars and everything. And then it just took off from there. And I had a very strong desire to do it. But at the time, as I started, I graduated high school in 2012. And back then, when I was in high school, they did not accept trades, I guess, if you will, as much as they're accepted now. Back then, it was go to college, get a degree. You got to have that piece of paper. Everybody kept telling me that I shouldn't do it and kept giving me every reason why I should just be like, no, like, you know, don't be a mechanic, you know, go get a degree. So part of it for me was I was stubborn. And I was like, well, all right, screw all of you. I'm going to prove you all wrong and I'm going to do it anyway. So.
Oh, Lord, it sounds like mine.
Yeah. It's not that's the only reason. Obviously, I had a passion for it, but it was so driven behind me trying to prove people wrong that it's the only thing I bothered trying to do. And I tried, you know, to dabble in trying to learn other things. And it just, I was never a person for school. So for me, it was very hard for me to actually get motivated to try and do something. This is all I ever wanted to do. I mean, I take that back. When I was a little kid, at one point, apparently I wanted to be a garbage man. According to my mother, I don't know. I don't remember doing that. I don't remember wanting to be that, but.
You know what? There's a couple things there. One, same.
Yeah.
Like, same.
Yeah.
My entire family was like, you're going to go to university. You need to go to university. Even though it's like, oh, we want you to do whatever you want. But it was like university was the second word. Every other word was go to university. And then, you know, I think I tried to placate them a bit by saying I'd go to college and I'd go for programming. Because at the time, you know, computer programming was super huge everywhere.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to be a programmer and it was making really awesome money at the time. So, and I was pretty good at it at the time. We're going back a long time. This has been like a long time, like 23, 24 years. And like my buddies and I in high school, we were coding. We were creating movies with coding in the computer room. Like we just were. And it wasn't hard. It was effort, but it wasn't hard. Like I remember my buddy Steve Pfeiffer, he made Dragon Ball. Like I have Dragon Ball tattooed on my skin because that's how much I love it, but he loves it so much. He also has tattoos, but he actually made a Dragon Ball skit through programming in the computer lab in high school. So this is like 20 plus years ago.
Yeah.
So programming was big. So I went to college for it. I went to Georgia and I went to college for it. So I barely attended. And when I did attend, I didn't enjoy it. And it's not that I didn't enjoy the programming. It's that every single one of them sons of bitches that was in that class around it teaching everybody was just horrible to me.
Yeah.
They were horrible human beings at the time.
Yeah.
And they had that air of I'm better than you in every way, in every part of the conversation I had with them. I just, you know, I'm an awkward human being at the best of times. I'm very socially awkward. You know, sometimes that may not come across, but I am very social awkward. So at the time for me to be outgoing in college for the first time, that wasn't a great experience. And
no.
I had the same mentality at the same time. It's like, screw it. I'm just going to work. You guys suck. You know, I'm not going to do what you say. I'm not going to go to university because you say it. I'm not going to do da 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 da. I'm going to do whatever I want. I want to go. So I was working full time at the grocery store at the time. And that's basically what I was doing. I wasn't really going to class. I was basically working full time. And I left what was equivalent, and now I can't believe how much money it would have been equivalent to today, but I was making $25 an hour working full time as a dairy manager at a grocery store, making 50 grand a year.
Right.
Like as an 18, 19 year old young boy, basically.
Yeah.
And I left that to make $9 an hour as a kid pushing a broom at a dealership. That's how much I wanted to do it. For whatever, all of the reasons, the stubbornness, the prove you wrong, the whatever. So I get it. I get it. So you got in. So what was the first store that you got through high school? You got that. You love it. You got to do a little bit in auto shop. You got, you know, your first thing was a lawnmower that you pulled apart and put back together, that you actually pulled it apart and put it back together in a reasonable amount of time versus the things that you did where you would take it apart and leave it.
Yeah.
What was the first store?
Towards the end of senior year through the summer after, I actually worked with one of my best friends on semis. And it wasn't a bad job. Hard job, for sure. But I found out very quickly that wasn't what I wanted to do. The money was there. Made really good money. I mean, same thing. I was like pushing a broom, doing the oil changes. I wasn't doing like big crazy stuff, but helped a lot of the other older guys that were there do things and everything. But I very quickly realized that like diesel or whatever was not what I wanted to do. I wanted to do automotive. So I did that for a while and then, you know, jumped around a couple dealers as a porter. Went and did a couple independent. Independent was when I actually got my first job wrenching, and I got burned pretty bad. Got taken advantage of. I was doing so by that point. By the time I was working the independent, I was actually now going to school for mechanics. Just so that I could get something. And by that point, I had a pretty decent amount of knowledge. All my friends and I, we would do everything in the driveways, you know, take our cars apart, not be able to put them back together, break things, whatever. I was doing a lot more than I was getting paid for. I think at the time I was... God, how old was I? I had to have been like 21, 22-ish, somewhere around there. And I was making $13 an hour, I think. And I was doing everything from oil changes to brakes to suspension to engine work. And obviously it was an independent, so I worked on everything and anything. I worked out of a little cart. I didn't even have a full toolbox, and I kept asking like, hey, you know, can we talk about me getting paid a little more, yada, 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 whatever. The people I worked for, super nice people. I liked the people I worked for, but the owner just did not want to pay me for it. And obviously you have me getting paid $13 an hour doing all this work. Yeah, it's going to be a benefit. I get it. But I finally got to a point where I was just like, you know what? I'm done. Like, I'm just done. I'm not putting up with this anymore. And I just one day just was like, same thing as how it started. I just said, screw it. And I left. Literally took my cart, tossed it in the back of my truck and said, you know what? Send me my last check in the mail. Like, I'm done. Okay, goodbye. And I went from there to a second independent place. And I left that place and I actually almost stopped working in cars completely. I made a mistake that could have cost a family their lives, and that hit me so hard that I quit. I packed up all my shit and I was like, you know what? I'm done. I was like, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I'm not supposed to do this. Maybe this isn't the field I need to be in. Maybe I've been lying to myself. Went home. hung out with one of my friends later that day. His dad is a mechanic, 30 years plus. He sat me down and talked to me for probably 45 minutes and told me why I needed to go find a job doing this, being a mechanic. And he's like, you're not stupid. You made a mistake. He goes, yeah. He goes, was it a bad one? Of course it was. But, you know, everybody's going to make a mistake. My dad is not a car guy at all. He's worked in an office his whole life. He kind of tries to talk to me about it, but even he wasn't encouraging. And even he said, you know, maybe this isn't for you. Maybe you're not good at this. So the fact that my own dad didn't believe in me, and then the fact that my friend's dad was like, you need to do this, was the reason I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to go get back into it. And that's how I ended up at a dealer almost 8 years ago. And it has been the greatest thing that's happened. Never thought it, but walking into that dealer and filling out an application as a porter and getting hired as a lube tech was probably the greatest thing that I could have ever done, because the opportunities that I have been given and that I hopefully will be given in the future are more than I could have ever thought I would have had or that I could have even achieved.
So there's a couple things there. One, I truly appreciate your genuine honesty and transparency. Mm-hmm. I'm getting emotional here a bit. There is a very real fear amongst technicians I talk to about what happens when you fuck up.
Yeah. That's Sarge something that I...
Sarge mentioned today in SDL, and he made mentions like, you know, if I'm having a crap week, I want to know that I still have a job at the end of the week.
Yeah.
But your silence speak volumes. When you know you've made a mistake, especially a big mistake, you want to know that your head isn't immediately on the chopping block every single time you make a mistake. It doesn't matter how big or small the mistake is.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal to a lot of people. Make mention that from a reward point of view, people, and this is statistically proven, people do better long-term by 30%. If you praise people regularly, that's awesome. I appreciate you for doing it, especially as a service leader, if you appreciate your people. But people do 30% better if you praise for effort and not for the result.
Right.
And depending on the age of the person, that disparity gets bigger. So if you have 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds in your shop as a service leader, and you're praising for result, you're actually doing yourself, your team, and the individual a disservice by a margin of 45% or more. Your team could be producing, each of them could be producing more if you praise the effort versus the result. So the fact that you've got an individual that's in your corner praising you for the effort that you've put in, understanding you as a human being, your dad should be your biggest supporter.
Yeah.
Is that at the end of the day, and I've heard this, and I now say it to my own son, no one will support you like I do.
Right.
Because everyone else will have some kind of ulterior motive in some way, no matter how small, to see you fail or succeed. I don't care. I'm just here for you.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to hear that you had someone in your corner saying you as a human aren't the sum of your mistakes.
Yeah.
Turning tail, tuck and tail, and running away to something else because you made a mistake is not the appropriate answer.
Right.
Two, that in itself is impactful.
And like, so I appreciate. I don't necessarily think that, like, you know, at the time I was like super sad and everything that had happened, you know, emotions were all over the place. And, you know, looking back on it, I know, like, I don't think my dad meant to be mean, and I don't think he meant to hurt me. I think it was one of those things, being that he doesn't have an understanding of what this industry is or what goes into it. I mean, yeah, he understands there's effort and stuff that goes into fixing a car, but I think having his lack of knowledge to what goes into this day in and day out, he wasn't the person to, I guess, motivate me or to encourage me. And from his perspective, he was in the mindset of like, maybe this isn't it. Like, maybe you jumped too quick, you tried too fast, like whatever it was. And, you know, looking back, I don't even think I had that much of a conversation with him about it at even. But the fact that my friend's dad, who had been in the industry for so long, had that perspective, and he knew it. He understood it. He understood where my head was at the time. He was, at that time, my dad wasn't, and I don't blame my dad, obviously, like, just put that out there. I don't blame him yet. I don't fault him for not doing anything. But at that time, in that instance, my dad could have told me he believed in me and everything, and it honestly probably would not have mattered. In that time, my friend's dad was the person.
Because they had contacts.
Yeah. He could talk to me on a level where, yeah, my dad could say whatever he wanted to say, but where my mind was at that time, it wasn't going to matter. My friend's dad had the knowledge to back up what he was saying, and had the way, or the word, he had the right words and everything to actually make it mean something.
So I think what you're talking about, and this has come up in a lot of conversations in 10 mil, is that you had a dad in the shop, as it were.
Yeah.
You had somebody that's walked the shoes that you're trying to fill,
mm-hmm,
for long enough. They've been around, they've got children of their own. They've had children of their own in the shop, as it were, as I air quote for those that are listening. That dad in the shop, that foreman, that leader in the shop, not the service manager.
No.
You know, not the people outside the shop, the people in the shop. Having the dad on the shop floor. And I brought it up in SDL this morning again too, right? There's going to be somebody in the shop, in every shop, there's always somebody that's a go-to person. And they don't have to be the technical go-to person, but maybe they're the empath of the shop that everybody downloads to because they listen.
Right.
And good, bad, or otherwise, those are the people that can make or break your shop, because if they can help people with life, not just with the cars they're fixing, and they can do it well, you can have an exemplary leader on the shop floor.
Yeah.
And if you're listening as a service leader, as somebody leading the shop, service manager, fixed ops director, whatever the case may be, having those kinds of people in your shop is also a challenge for you, because now you have somebody who is potentially usurping your authority, and you have to be careful from both sides. A, you have to give them the authority and the autonomy to be able to lead the shop. And if you are capable of doing that, they're going to do well, but you also have to hold them accountable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hold them accountable for what they're doing. Because like I brought up, people who are active listeners and empaths in that position can also easily go to burnout because they absorb so much emotion from the rest of the shop, especially if you've got a larger shop, 15, 17, 20 guys in the shop, or girls for that matter. But it's more like 19 guys and one girl in that kind of split.
Yeah.
But I digress. The point is, the amount of emotion that they absorb can easily mentally burn somebody out. And then you lose this... Then you lose this incredibly great resource in the shop for people to go to. So you have to be mindful of their well-being just as much as the whole team's, in a different way. So I'm glad that you had a mechanic dad, so to speak.
Well, that comes back to like, and it's something that I always tell like the younger kids, like it's the biggest piece of it. I guess you could call it advice. Yeah. I guess you could call it advice. I always tell them, I said, you know, I said, we're just as important as, and I have a lot of young kids in my shop, 18, 19, 21, you know. And I tell them, I was like, you have to realize, I was like, we are just as important as a doctor, as a surgeon. I said, at any given point in time, I said, you guys have to really, really stop and think. I said, we have rubber, plastic, and metal that weighs anywhere from 2,000 to 8,000 pounds. And we're responsible for maintaining it and fixing it and making sure that when that car leaves, I said, it's a weapon. It can be used as a weapon. You don't think about that. And I said, you have to think that even something as simple as an oil change, I said, we have people's lives in our hands just as much as a surgeon has somebody on an operating table. And I've had a couple kids kind of look at me and they go, oh, well, yeah, you know, I get it. And I said, stop, think. And I've told some of them, because some of them get it. Some of them stop and think about it for a second. They go, oh, well, yeah, I guess you're right. And some of them are just like, oh, yeah, okay. And I'm like, no, don't just say okay. Think about what I'm telling you. I said, you make a mistake. A wheel falls off. The brake caliper comes off. So whatever the case is. You don't tighten a drain plug. Drain plug falls out. Oil spills out of the car. Motor locks up. That person gets hit. And they die. Then what? And that's when they usually look at me with the big eyes and they're like, oh. I'm like, it's an oil change. It's the simplest thing that you can do to a car.
It's typically the first thing that you learn to do.
And it's the one thing that you'll overlook the most. And I told him, I was like, do you know how many times that I go home and I go, crap, did I tighten that bolt? I actually took an engine apart after putting it all back together because I couldn't remember if I tightened one stupid little bolt. And I was like, no, I tightened it. I know I tightened it. I know I did. But I doubted myself. So I took it all back apart. Turns out I didn't tighten it.
Thank God.
No.
I think a lot of leaders misunderstand a lot of service, especially the ones who have been in the game a short period of time, 5 years or less, and have never turned a wrench. I don't think they grasp the mental state of the average technician who even remotely cares. Because yeah. what you're giving an example of here is basically losing sleep over a lack of memory of one step in a process that's probably about 500 steps long, minimum. Mm-hmm.
That I've done countless times.
Right? And when you get to a point where you can do large tasks like re-entry an engine or disassemble an engine, and you can do it near without looking at the manual, remembering whether you tighten something or not will keep you up at night.
100%.
I have talked to enough service managers in my career and in the last 2 years trying to speak to leaders, trying to pitch my survey.
Yeah.
But I've talked to enough of them that they don't – I know for a fact that the 80-20 rule exists wholeheartedly with service leaders because they don't grasp the emotional toll that it takes on an individual that can't go – I tightened that.
Mm-hmm.
Those three words utilized in the I did or I didn't phraseology. Yep. At night at 2 o'clock in the morning when you wake up, it's like, I didn't tighten that.
Yep.
That will keep you up forever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I have seen a technician walk in with the head held as low as humanly possible, walk up to the service manager and say, we need to call this car back.
Yep.
I know with beyond a shadow of a doubt that I've not done something, and if we don't get him back, something may happen.
Yeah.
And thank God he was wrong.
Right.
But we got the car back in, and we double-checked that it was tight. It's like, I haven't slept for 2 days.
Yep.
So think about this in from a broad spectrum, from a psychological state. This individual hasn't slept for 2 days since the car was last in. So they didn't sleep night one. So everything on the day after, what's the likelihood that they did a great anything the day after?
Seven.
Night two, they haven't. Nope, head's not there. One night not sleep, you know what? The average father out there understands what one night of not sleeping is, because you've been up all night with a newborn. It happens.
Yeah.
So you get through it, and usually the following night, you completely crash, right? There is nothing left in the tank after being awake for, you know, anywhere from 36 to 48 hours. But when you point where night two and you haven't slept, that day two after not sleeping, I've been there. You are not even human at that point, and they're still trying to fix a car.
Yeah.
And it's all because they are thinking about the thing that they may or may not have done on a car 2 days ago, which may or may not be 15 or 20 cars ago.
Right.
So when I say one-to-ones are important, that's why.
Yeah.
That's why, because if you were doing one-to-ones, if that shop that I was at was doing one-to-ones, that would never have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because that tech would have trusted the shop foreman and the service manager enough to have gone to them. It's like, gut's telling me, no, we need, I realized they just left, get him back here now.
Yeah. I'd rather have a customer come back and be inconvenienced for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Than to have them leave and just go, nah, it should be all right.
Yeah. There's so much mental toll there that it is not talked about enough.
No.
It's not talked about enough. And this is why you and I know you do when you've talked on SDL, but I preach how important process is. You get good before you get fast. The challenge is with not specifically with flat rate, but with leaders who don't understand the tolls of the mental and emotional state of a technician who goes from brand new to fast. Like, you can make somebody fast really quick.
Yeah.
Like I know that a couple of leaders have told me that they can basically turn in the US, because it's a little different here in Canada because of our regulation and so on and so forth with apprentices and so on and forth. But they could turn someone from day one, note no shit from shit, into a technically trained, so book smart. They can put a full level three tech on the floor in 18 months. Well, if you take an 18-year-old and download that much information into them in 18 months, they still haven't matured. They're still 19 and change. They don't have a brain. The average man does not mature until they're 25, because that is the literal time when our brain stops maturing. We are now effectively men at 25. So they still have 5.5 years of maturing occurring, but you've downloaded, as Russell pointed out this morning, and as Richard pointed out this morning, a GM, a world-class GM, I can't remember how it's phrased. Forgive me for those who are GM techs and Richard and Russell. It's 600 hours of training.
Yeah.
600 hours of training is like doing training nonstop for about 5 months of a year, give or take. They still haven't matured. They still don't have the responsibility quotient of the brain to go, I need to learn how to do this well before I learn how to do it fast.
Yeah.
Because the arrogant 19-year-old Joshua, who said, I can fix everything and I can do this and I can do this and I can do this, fucked up all the damn time.
Yeah.
And I was too arrogant at the time to realize my mistakes. And thank God I had an amazing mechanic dad on the shop floor, my shop foreman, who literally every day did everything to do he possibly could to put foot to ass to kick the arrogance out of me enough for me to be a responsible human being and an excellent technician. Okay. So mindful of the mental state, mindful of training, and mindful of the fact that even though you can download Master Tech into somebody in 18 months, that doesn't mean they're mature enough to use it.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it. So you're in a dealership and you've been in the dealership for the last 8 years plus, and you're having an awesome time. What are some challenges outside of what we've been talking about that you've come across in the last, let's say, if you can give me an example, give me an example of a major challenge that you've come across.
Becoming the foreman. That was a,
what was that like?
That was a hurdle. That was a hurdle and a half. That was, I always had a dream of owning my own shop when I was younger. And then I very quickly realized I did not want to do that. And I was like, well, I'm a very naturally caring person. I sometimes care too much. And I was like, well, I said, I want to be that guy. So years and years ago, manager at the time sat a bunch of us down and said, all right, what do you guys want to do? And I said, well, I want to be that guy. I want to be that dad. I want to be that guy. I want to be the one who, when I walk in this place, everybody goes, he's the one. He's whom you need to talk to. And I have now spent the last 5 years, I would say, starting that process. And in that process, you sacrifice time, you sacrifice hours, you sacrifice money, you sacrifice free time. I can't tell you how many days I would show up at 5:30 in the morning and I wouldn't leave until 7:30 at night. And I would just grind and grind and grind. And there would be times that I was grinding and I wasn't getting paid. And, you know, I was the, hey, can you help me out? Can you hook me up with a favor? Like, can we just take care of this real quick? And I became that guy. And I put all of my effort into learning and asking questions, doing whatever it is I needed to do to get that edge. And guys came, guys left. We had people leave, and I slowly worked my way up to finally becoming the foreman. That's not a role that you can just give. That's a role that needs to be earned. And you can't necessarily teach that. That person has to want to do that, to do it effectively. Anybody could be a foreman. You could take any guy that can turn a wrench and you can be like, hey, you know, you're in charge. Great. Now what? You're going to have younger kids. If they're not approachable, they're not going to be a good foreman. They're not going to be a good leader. It's like you said, you have to have a certain level of empathy, I think, to be an effective leader. Because sometimes they're going to come, like I have one kid right now. He's one of my like up and comings. He reminds me a lot of myself. He's 18 years old. He's, you know, out of high school, and he's pushing, and you can tell he wants to learn everything he can as fast as he can. Yeah, gimme, 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 gimme. And I have to continuously tell him to like, stop. I have to be like, stop, slow down, breathe. I'm like, one thing at a time. And he's like, yeah, but I'm like, no, yeah, but stop talking. Just listen to me for a second. Explain it to him. And then he stares, he looks at me like kind of with this, like when a dog kind of goes, huh? Yeah. He looks at me and he goes, oh, he goes, well, that makes more sense. Good kid. But he reminds me a lot of me. And there's a lot of guys in that shop that don't have the patience for that. But learning that patience, that was a struggle. That was a big struggle. And it did not come easily either.
I really love that you've broken that down and stop, slow down, listen, breathe. So the big thing here is to remember for technician, give you an analogy here. Campsite fire. It takes a lot of energy, time, and effort to build what you need to build to start a fire and get it going. And, you know, how you figure out how to get it lit and get it lit. Fires tend to burn very brightly, very hot for a short period of time to get all that wood and all that fuel and so on, get burning. You know, really bright, throws off a lot of heat right off the bat. Yep. It's like your typical 18-year-old, right?
Yes.
And then after a period of time, the fire dies down a little bit. And, you know, it's a low-level fire for hours. Kind of like that 20 to 30-year-old, right?
Yeah.
And after a period of time, and then the fire down so much, but you've got lots of hot, red-hot coal. And that will typically keep somebody warm through the night, all night.
Yeah.
You know, if it was a properly set fire in the first place with lots of fuel up in the first place, those embers will be there for hours and hours. And it'll still throw off some heat, but it might be really, really small amount of heat by the wee hours in the morning. Mm. Like that 40-year-old still on the shop floor. How easy is it to now get a fire lit from those embers?
It's almost instant.
Right, with the right amount of fuel, the right amount of wood, just the right. Doesn't take a lot.
Yep.
It takes a little bit. And the challenge is right now that you got him to slow down and you got him to listen. He's starting to understand. So now the fire's just kind of bubbling over. The challenge is right now is that those embers at the end of the night, instead of being stoked and relit with apprentices to teach or a promotion to shop foreman or promotion or training into service management, those fires, those embers are going out.
Yep.
It's not hard to relight that fire with the right fuel.
Yeah.
It takes very little with the right fuel. Without it, the embers go out and then they're gone.
Yep.
That is our trade.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful right now that you are throughout your process, you're getting the slowdown. It's like you've got the fire burning bright and then, okay, they've got their interest. Yeah. Now you're getting them to go through the process and learn nice and slow. So they learn each step, one and so forth. That's really awesome. And I guess that's a great way to lead into your piece of advice. What is your one piece of advice to help a technician be happier or healthier or more productive tomorrow?
It's something I try to instill on if people I talk to, and you don't even have to apply it to just a mechanic. I mean, obviously, yes, it is very applicable. You gotta know your own worth. And you can't be afraid to back it up. But at the same time, you can't let it go to your head. And that's something that I didn't struggle with it, but it's something that I was always conscious of, is that I never wanted to get an inflated ego. I didn't want to let my ego get out of hand. You know, I moved up pretty quick in the dealership world, much quicker than I thought I would have. And a lot of people have told me that. They're like, wow, like you moved up that fast. And it's like, yeah, they're like, wow, like how did that work? And, you know, I tell them my story and all that nonsense, but
once you tell your story, it makes sense because you were putting in stupid amount of hours to get better, and you were doing things outside of the normal days in order to try and get yourself better, be better, learn the technical bits, learn the non-technical bits.
Yeah. You almost
the surprise and luck, right, comes around when people don't see all the work that you've been putting in.
Right. And that's the thing. It's almost like you kind of do like the behind the scenes, like things get done, cars get fixed. But do you get the recognition? No. But I didn't. I didn't always get the pat on the back, or I didn't always get the, hey, Steve did this, Steve did that. But at the same time, I didn't always need it. Now, don't get me wrong. Every now and then when I would get the pat on the back or the, hey, good job, Steve, or Steve did this, it felt really good. And you get, you know, you kind of like puff your chest a little and you're like, aha, yeah, look at me. Like, I'm the one. I did it. Like, go me. But at the same time, you need to stay very humble, because you start getting an inflated ego, you start getting a big head. You'll do more of a disadvantage to yourself than you will an advantage.
Agreed. I think there's a great phrase that I've heard recently that, and I'm not sure who said it. I'm not even sure whether I came up with it. To be completely honest, because it's been diluted and changed and then, you know, concentrated more again. If you can take all of the blame and none of the credit, you're going to be the best leader that anybody's ever seen.
Yep.
And if you function happily, and I'm also kind of transitioning, I'm not sure happy is even the right word to use anymore. If you can be content, because I think content is a better word to use, because happy is like an emotion that you feel depending on the circumstance. But if you can be content is like a place of peace
that
are enough. Don't feel like you have to get validated. You don't feel like you need praise. You don't feel like you are existing in a place where it just feels right. That contentment.
When I go home at the end of the day, I know I did it. And for me, that's enough.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, I said, I get the I get the praise and the credit every now and then. And when I do, it's like, yeah, that feels really good. But I don't need it on a day to day. I know that when I walk into that place, everybody there knows the effort that I put in. And they know that if something needs to happen, they know that they can come to me and that it will be done because of the effort that I have put in. And a lot of it too is, and I tell all the younger guys too, I said, put the effort in. You're not going to get praise. You're not going to get the credit, but I guarantee you people are paying attention. People talk. There's eyes everywhere and people talk to each other. I said, you might not think it, but it's being noticed. And I said, at some point in time, it's going to come back around. And then all of a sudden something's going to happen. It's not going to be mentioned, but all of a sudden you're going to be like, whoa, oh, maybe my effort did pay off. And that's what I tell them. I said, don't take it for granted. Especially like you said, some of these kids that are younger, they're making $20-$25 an hour at, you know, 20, 21 years old. 21 years old, I was making $12 an hour. I tell them, I was like, you realize that you guys are in such a good spot right now. Just enjoy it.
I'm thankful that you're in a place in a lot of perspectives, you're in a place where they're getting paid properly.
Yeah.
There are some folks out there that aren't.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I tell young mechanics that come to me for coaching or that I try to have one-on-ones with is remember that as an 18, 19, 20, 21 year old coming into this trade, the ass you kick today might be the ass you have to kiss tomorrow.
Yep.
And the reason I say that is the appropriate ratio is for every one journeyman technician, there should be roughly 25 junior technicians. And a journeyman technician is someone who genuinely, now there's, it's thrown out a lot, and I don't necessarily agree with it all, but a journeyman is somebody who can be technically a leader. A journeyman is not just simply somebody who's been around the trade for 15 years. I don't believe. Right. A journeyman is a leader, especially on the shop floor, or could be a leader on the shop floor. So for every one of those, there should be roughly 25 junior mechanics to them. And junior mechanics to them is basically anybody that is 10 years or less. And to my perspective and my opinion is that if you are in a group that are recently onboarded into the shop for the, and you're 18, 19, 20, 21, give or take, let's say there's 10 of you in that position, in that store. If you've been there for 4 years and somebody comes on board and you're giving them shit and you're grinding their gears and you're kicking their ass and so on and so forth, they may have more drive, more ambition, more know-how, more talent, and more desire to work harder than you than you've ever seen before, and you may not know it. And like Steve had mentioned earlier, they're putting in hours that you don't see. And in a short period of time, they could be a better diagnostician. They could be better at the processes that you've been working 4 years on, and they could be better at it in 6 months. And in 6 months' time, they could be equal to you in production, productivity, and technical training. And in 6 months, again, they could be better than you technically, from at least from a statistic point of view, than you may ever be. They may get promoted. They may have significantly less time in trade than you, have significantly less technical knowledge than you in because of sheer time difference. But they may get promoted. And they may get promoted again because of the effort that they put in to get there. So Steve's advice here about being humble, folks, is very, very real, especially in how fast our trade advances. So I appreciate that for that piece of advice, Steve. That's an awesome plus T example.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear it. So that leads us to one last question that I want to ask you. Are you happy?
Yeah, I am. I am happy. That's, I love what I do.
Here.
I absolutely love what I do. Wouldn't, and I wouldn't give it up for anything.
Love it.
This is,
on that note, I think that's
what I always wanted to do. That is like my last thing is I am in a position where I don't go to work. When I get up in the morning, I go and get paid to do what I love to do every single day, 6 days a week.
That's not to say that it's not hard work, though.
don't let that be confused. It's not.
Never let anybody tell you. Was it go find something you love to do and you never work a day in your life? Bullshit. It's still hard damn work.
There's days I get out of bed a little slower than other days, but no, I am very happy and I thoroughly love what I do for as a career. It's not even a job, it's a career.
Marvelous.
Yeah.
Marvelous. That's a great way to end the show. I love ending on such a high note. So, yeah. Oh no, folks, that's the end of another episode of the Wrench Turners podcast. Though, you know, folks, there will be another one coming in a few weeks. Though I really hope you enjoyed today's show. Steve had some really great perspectives, so I really hope you enjoyed it. And I really hope you subscribe to the show because you're going to see a whole lot more just like Steve. Don't forget, Wrench Turners merch is now available. Check out the link in the bio and down below to check it out for yourself, Wrench Turners Online. Don't forget, we're doing a split going into the new year because we have those hoodies. Marshall keeps telling me over and over again, flat rate sucks, change my mind. Well, I've got the flat rate rocks, change my mind too. So make sure you get on there, check it out for yourself, and let us know. Wrenches for Wrenches newsletter continues to go out bi-weekly. Don't forget to subscribe. Go on my LinkedIn or go on the website, wrenchturners.online. Get yourself subscribed. And folks, I love y'all. I really appreciate y'all. We're seeing some really, really cool stuff across the entire channel. Some really great guests like Steve on the show. There's going to be even more coming. There is just a great set of guests coming. So love y'all. Remember that negative pushes, positive pulls. And always clean your toys before you put them away.